You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
This is MLB.com Extras, Chicago White Sox edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovich, joined by Scott Merkin. And Merk and I have had a little fun on this podcast in the past with, I guess we could have titled this podcast, Spend Jerry's Money, because that's pretty much what we've done the last couple months leading into December. But then Rick Hahn went out and actually did it. We looked at this club as a central team with a really strong base. And Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, Jose Abreu, of course, VCL Garcia, Alexi Ramirez, Adam Eaton, and Carlos Rodon on the horizon. And then on top of that, the financial flexibility that came with Adam Dunn and Paul Konerko coming off the books. So we thought, hey, it's a pretty good-looking team, really, with some moves to be made, of course, but a decent core there. And boy, I think the White Sox exceeded everybody's expectations as far as what they did with that financial flexibility and kind of the state of their roster. Started with the Adam LaRoche signing. They've since, of course, added Jeff Samardzija, Melky Cabrera, really beefed up the bullpen with Zach Duke and David Robertson and Dan Jennings as well. And then just after the new year, adding Emilio Bonifacio to the infield, a very multifaceted player. So all of a sudden, this White Sox team is a real threat in a really tough division and definitely a legit playoff contender. So, Merk, I guess, just first of all, just your overall thoughts. I mean, did Rick Hahn do a better job of spending Jerry's money than you would have done?
Well, I think clearly it proves that they're listening to our podcast every week because they went out and spent just as we – I don't know if we threw Samardzija in
there. These guys are on to something.
Well, yeah, I think so. Maybe we'll see what puts something out there this week, see if it happens with the Sox in the next couple of weeks. No, I will say that I'm borderline stunned at the moves the Sox have made just because it hasn't really been their MO in the past. You know, they had the year where they signed Adam Dunn to the 4-year deal and then brought Paul Konerko back and brought AJ back. But that's usually more what they do. They usually kind of make, you know, one big addition or one or two big additions like they did with, you know, Jose Abreu last offseason. And then kind of, I don't want to say fill in, but kind of add necessary parts around him. And this year, just not only did they, you know, add huge impact players, I think if you count Bonifacio and their 7 moves they've made of significance in the offseason, but their moves that didn't really cost them. I mean, you know, I'm not disparaging anyone they traded because they were all good prospects and a couple, you know, in the Samardzija deal, Semien and Bassett, probably would have helped out this year with the White Sox. But none of the guys were really huge on the 3-year board for the White Sox. So they didn't really lose anyone. They added in almost every position in need. And plus, they really didn't add contracts that are going to hamstring them in the future. I'm going to write about that in the next couple of days here at MLB.com. But, you know, I suppose David Robertson, if suddenly he loses the great effectiveness he's had every year pretty much in his career and just can't close for the White Sox, that would be one deal that could get you in the long run 4 years, $46 million for a closer. But I don't expect that to happen with him. And really, everyone else is kind of a reasonable deal that certainly doesn't hamstring your payroll. And even if things go south and you need to move someone, they're all guys who you can, you know, do that with the contract they have. So just, you know, not drinking the Kool-Aid, but really not saying they're going to win 96 or 86 or 83, but it's been an A-plus offseason for Rick Hahn and the White Sox, no doubt about that. I don't know how anyone could argue that point. You can argue and say, well, they're still short in the back end of the rotation, or they still need another reliever, or you're still not sure if they can make up a difference on Detroit and Kansas City and even Cleveland, but you can't argue that Rick Hahn has had a tremendous offseason in building this club.
Yeah, I'm with you there. You know, I think the one thing I would quibble with is that Robertson contract. That's probably the one move here I wouldn't have made. I hate those, you know, 4-year contracts for relievers, and I hate the whole quote unquote proven closer premium right that must be paid in the marketplace. But you also understand where they're coming from, just given the state of the bullpen last year, and so they added a few pieces to that. You know, well, in the short term, things certainly look good.
It's interesting. At the beginning of the offseason, I heard talk about maybe Frank Montes, who is a young 100-mile-an-hour fastball kid who was acquired in the Jake Peavy, obviously El Garcia, 3-team trade back, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah.
The closer candidate. I even heard Rodon as a possible closer candidate. I think as the offseason moved on, well, I think they really had Robertson in mind all along, but I think they really decided, you know, they want that ninth inning lockdown. They have the pieces to bridge the gap from a good starting rotation to the ninth inning. So they, you know, they really wanted that ninth inning lockdown, and he was the best guy to get. But I do see what you're saying. I think it's the one deal that, if things go astray, could hurt you a little bit. But, you know, you're willing to take the chance on Robertson.
Sure, and you hit the nail on the head earlier. You know, they make all these moves, and they kept Montas, they kept Rodon, they kept Spencer Adams and Tyler Danish. And also, just as a function of it being protected, they kept the eighth overall pick for this year's draft. So that's good stuff as well. So now you look at this lineup, Merck. You got Eaton leading off. You got the Milkman number two. You got Abreu probably number three. LaRoche can bat cleanup for you. Maybe Garcia in the five spot. I mean, that's a lineup you can win with, especially in today's environment. We know run production is down in general, and that's really strong. What I like about it, I think what I really like about it is you're not asking Cabrera in particular to be, you know, the focal point of your offense. He's more of that complementary piece in the two hole. You know, you're certainly hoping for a lot of power from LaRoche, and I think U.S. Cellular Field really plays to his strengths. And of course, better protection for Abreu.
Yeah, and I think another thing not to be lost is Alexi Ramirez enjoys the run producer spot in the lineup more than he did, like, the number two spot, where you can drive and run, certainly, especially with a guy like Eaton on base and ahead of you. But, you know, there's more responsibility in that two spot. You may have to take a few pitches. You may have to give yourself up, hit the other way a couple times just to get the runner over. Alexi has talked about he really enjoys driving and run. So now you're going to put him lower in the lineup and give him more of a chance. Of course, if the guys, you know, that strong middle and drive everyone in before you, and Abreu, LaRoche, and Garcia. But I think that's better for him, too. And I think another thing they've done is they've gone more athletic. You know, you can put Bonifacio over third base in place of Gillespie from time to time and, you know, have the more speed in the lineup that you have out there. So you can go power, you can go speed. I mean, it's just a really good balance overall what they have in that offense right now. And I think one thing to be cautious about of LaRoche, I've seen some articles where people predicted maybe he could lead the American League in home runs and all that, and I realize the different case and you can't live in the past, but, you know, there were the same sort of talk when Adam Dunn came over, you know, with that rally at U.S. Cellular Field, especially when it's warm, is right center, and that's the way Dunn hit, and that's where LaRoche is. But I think just let LaRoche be LaRoche. You know, he's obviously nothing against Adam Dunn, who you covered, Anthony, great, one of the greatest guys you're going to cover, and, you know, an accomplished career, 460-some home runs, and You know, good teammate, contributed to the clubhouse, just didn't have a good run with the White Sox overall. LaRoche is a better defensive player, so he's going to be in the field more than Dunn, and I think that's going to make a difference for a guy going to DH for the first time. But I think just normal expectations for LaRoche are good. Yeah, he probably will hit some more home runs at U.S. Cellular Field, but I wouldn't go in expecting him hitting, you know, 45, 50 in his first year, just kind of being what he has overall. But it's a good line. It's a good lineup from top to bottom now, and like I said, they can go power-based, they can also go speed-based, and it's just more athletic overall.
Well, you talked about Don, you talked about clubhouse makeup. I know fans don't always care about this sort of thing, but LaRoche is just off the charts in that department as well. Just a great addition there. And Samardzija, too. You know, this guy, I really like the Shark. I just think, not just for what he does on the mound, but I really think this guy who really set out to prove he can be an elite starter in this league and was willing to, you know, make the adjustments it took to become that. And last year, the big one for him was he cut his walk rate basically in half while pretty much maintaining his strikeout rate and obviously became a high-profile trade target twice now within the span of a calendar year. But what do you think of the Shark long-term here? We know his comfort level with the Chicago area in general. I know this is more of a topic for next offseason, but you think there might be a long-term fit here?
Well, I think if Rick Hahn gets him to a long-term contract before the year ends, then that might be his biggest move of anything that he's done in this offseason. I really think, just listening to Jeff Samardzija talk, that it's no offense to the White Sox, but I really believe something, unless something startling comes along, he's going to test free agency. That's been his goal all along, and, you know, you don't blame him when you see some of the contracts for guys who are, you know, a little more accomplished than him. They've been in the game longer, like a John Lester or whatever Max Scherzer ends up with. But if he comes out and has a good year for the White Sox, you know, I don't blame him for going out and seeing what the open market offers. In the same sense, you know, he grew up a Sox fan. He played for the Cubs. He's now going to play for the White Sox. He knows Chicago. He played football at that school in South Bend, Indiana. You know, he was an accomplished receiver there. He knows the area. He likes the South Side of Chicago. So the Sox may have an advantage, assuming they're competitive in the market, if it gets to that point. And that, especially if they have a good team, let's say they have a good team, not a great team this year. Let's say they take a huge step and win 86 games and are right in contention all year, maybe even fall short. And that's just like, let's assume it's at that level. Samardzija still will get to know this team. He'll get to know the team that's going to be there for a few years to come. Some of the young guys are coming up, Robin Ventura, Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams, Jerry Reinsdorf, the whole organization. And that's, there's certainly something to be said about that. Even if he does not, you know, want a multi-year deal at this point with the White Sox, there's certainly something to be said going into that free agency period that the Sox still could be, you know, prime contenders. So I think it's a great move. Like I said, Marcus Semien would have been a, you know, good utility infield guy for the White Sox. Chris Bassitt proved that he has some value, both maybe at the back end of the starting rotation or in the bullpen. Josh Begley really didn't have a role, you know, as a backstop for the White Sox right now, and Ronel Ravelo was kind of up and coming, but not really in the picture yet. So they traded four good prospects, but as you said, none of their elite guys for basically, you know, a guy who's going to make a huge 1-2 punch with Chris Sale on top of the rotation. You know, even if it is, again, worst case scenario, one season, it's still a huge pickup for the White Sox.
Well, and that trade obviously impacted their immediate outlook at second base, but then they addressed that in some fashion with the Bonifacio signing. And do you see him as the regular at second base? We know he's a guy who can play all over and do a lot of things for you, so maybe he's best suited to that particular role. But is he the opening day second baseman, do you think?
I don't think so. What I see right now is still Micah Johnson, who, you know, is 2 years removed from leading the minor leagues with 83 stolen bases, and Carlos Sanchez, who looked very solid in his short time in September last year playing second base. I see those two battling for the job. And they're both young guys, not a huge amount even of minor league experience. So I think the case can be had that if they're not ready, Bonifacio could start as the opening day second baseman. But I think both those guys are going to be given a chance to win that job. And then Bonifacio can be used really in his best role, and that's super utility guy. You know, I think he's played six positions pretty regularly over his career, third, short, second, and all three outfield. So it's a great guy to have off the bench to really, you know, have you backed up in any spot and can, you know, really fill in for Eaton if Eaton needs a day off or two as a leadoff guy too. So I think the Sox are better off if Micah Johnson or Carlos Sanchez wins that second base job.
Well, we'll see what else Rick Hahn has up his sleeve, if anything, between now and spring training. But he's certainly given us a lot of fodder for this podcast and future podcasts here the next couple of months. But, Merck, it's a new year, so I think my last question for you on this particular podcast is this the year we finally get an Eagles comeback tour? Because, you know, these guys haven't played together in, what, like 2 or 3 weeks?
You know, with Jim Harbaugh returning to Michigan, I think the possibilities are endless. I think anything can happen. And I think the Eagles may embark on their 17th final tour. In fairness to them, I don't think they call it their final tour. I think they're just, it's like Kiss. I think Kiss has been on their farewell tour, or reunion tour, or farewell tour
right.
Since I was like a junior in college. And that was a while ago. So, you know, I think they're just out there playing. So just enjoy them when they come to your town if you have a little bit of money to spend on their tickets.
It's called the Search for More of Merck's Money Tour. It's like, and Merck and Rick Hahn did a good job spending all of Jerry Reinsdorf's money. So
right.
I want to thank Scott Merck for joining us. And thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extra Chicago White Sox Edition.
Visit the official online shop of Major League Baseball at MLB.com/shop for the largest selection of authentic caps, T-shirts, jerseys, hoodies, collectibles, and more. Get your gear straight from the source, the MLB.com shop.